Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant, John Russell, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
Researchers say that a highly infectious variant of the new coronavirus is 30% to 100% more deadly than earlier strong variants. The variant was first found in Britain late last year and has since spread around the world. The new study compared death rates among people in Britain infected with the new variant to those infected with other versions of the virus. Scientists said that the new variant's death rate was significantly higher. The variant is known as B117. B117 was first found in Britain in September 2020. It has since been found in more than 100 other countries. It has 23 mutations in its genetic material, and some of those changes make it spread more easily. Scientists say it is about 40 to 70% more infectious than earlier strong variants. In the British study, infection with the new variant led to 227 deaths in a group of nearly 55,000 COVID-19 patients. That is in comparison with 141 deaths among the same number of patients infected with other variants. The British variant also is able to spread quickly. This makes B117 a threat that should be taken seriously, said Robert Challen. He is a researcher at Exeter University who co-led the research. Independent experts said this study's findings add to earlier evidence linking B117 with a higher risk of death from COVID-19. Lawrence Young is a virologist and professor of molecular oncology at Warwick University. He said the reasons for B117's higher death rate are still not clear, but they could be related to higher levels of virus replication and that B117 is more infectious. Young warned that the British variant was likely the cause for a recent rise in infections across Europe. I'm Alice Bryant.
Across the United States, COVID-19 vaccinations are changing older Americans' lives. The coronavirus health crisis forced many people in the high-risk group to be separated from family and friends for the past year. But today, many older Americans are visiting family members. They are eating at their favorite restaurants and visiting stores without fear of becoming severely ill. 2 weeks after receiving her second COVID-19 vaccine shot, Sylvia Bear spent a day getting an eye examination, having her nails done, and buying food at a market. Before the crisis, such a day would have been completely normal. The 71-year-old pair lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and works as a college professor. She became emotional at her eye doctor's office. It marked the first time in nearly a year that she had stepped inside a building that was not her own home for more than a few seconds. "I was so happy," she said. She also commented how happy she was to walk into a food store again later that day. She bought some of her favorite sweet and salty foods. But the rise of new, possibly more easily spread versions of the coronavirus is causing some vaccinated seniors to return to their usual lives more slowly. And the effects of so many deaths among people they knew, plus the mental harm that comes with months of being separated, will not disappear soon.
80-year-old Linda DeBrusen expects to welcome three friends into her home in Southfield, Michigan. All of them have been vaccinated. The friends plan to restart a weekly card game of Canasta, which they have not done since last spring. For many seniors, the best part about being vaccinated is being able to see family again after missing weddings, births, holidays, and other celebrations. Older Americans often face other health risks. They have felt the loss of a full year deeply. 76-year-old Sharon Halper of Warwick, New York, expects to receive the second of her two-shot vaccination in the middle of March. 2 weeks after that, when researchers say the full effect of the vaccine is reached, she plans to cook a big meal. She is going to invite her grandsons for dinner at her home. "I can't wait to hug them again," said Halper. Lonnie Henauer is 85 years old. He and his wife, Bette, are leaving their home in West Orange, New Jersey this week and flying to Florida to visit their daughter. They have not seen her since November 2019, when they celebrated the Thanksgiving holiday together. Thanksgiving 2020 was the first holiday the two had spent alone, without their children, in more than 50 years. "When you get old, you don't know how many more holidays you have," Henauer said.
Even everyday activities have taken on new importance for vaccinated seniors. People are now permitted to sit in groups of four and have face-to-face discussions inside the Penswood Village Retirement Community in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Resident Judy Yaskin, who is 79, hopes eating together will be permitted again soon. That would bring an end to eating meals alone in her living area. "Who knew that eating lunch could seem so exciting?" she said. Some seniors say they do not plan to return to some usual activities anytime soon. Arlene Schimmel, a 70-year-old who lives in New York City, said she would still not go to an indoor movie or a restaurant. She said she would only visit friends who have also been vaccinated. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell.
Google has announced plans to stop supporting tools designed to follow internet users across the web in order to target them with specific advertising. Such tools are known as cookies. These are small data files that are stored on an internet user's computer as they browse different websites. This data can be read by web servers to identify web browsing behaviors of the user. Cookies make it possible for users to avoid having to repeatedly enter their usernames and passwords to get access to websites they use often. But the use of cookies raises major privacy concerns, with critics saying a user's browsing history should not be recorded just to target them with ads. Google announced in 2020 it had decided to remove support for third-party cookies from its Chrome browser. Chrome has a world market share of about 60%. Other browsers, such as Mozilla's Firefox and Apple's Safari, have already blocked third-party cookies. In another recent online announcement, Google repeated this promise and said it will not build or use new tools to replace current cookie technology. In explaining its decision, Google pointed to a Pew Research study that found 72% of Americans feel that almost all of what they do online or on a cell phone is tracked by advertisers. Google's decision to remove third-party cookies also followed increasing efforts to protect privacy in Europe and the United States. Google said the current internet advertising model needs to change to answer the growing concerns people have about their privacy and how their personal identity is being used. Otherwise, it added, we risk the future of the free and open web. In January, however, Google's plan was called into question by British competition regulators. The country's Competition and Markets Authority announced it had launched an investigation into whether the changes would give Google an unfair advantage over competitors in internet advertising. The agency said it received objections to the plan from Marketers for an Open Web, a coalition of technology and publishing companies. The group accuses Google of abusing its dominant position by attempting to create a new advertising model. In its latest statement, Google said it has been working with others in the industry on the Privacy Sandbox project, which aims to create a new system to please both advertisers and publishers. Google also repeated that it does not plan to replace third-party cookies with new user-level identifiers. We will not build alternate identifiers to track individuals as they browse across the web, nor will we use them in our products, the company said. What Google is proposing is to group web users with similar interests together to gather information for advertising purposes. Such a system would hide individuals within large groups of people and prevent individual tracking, the company said. Businesses could, for example, target ads to a group of people who show interest in buying a car, rather than using cookies that tracked individual users across different car-buying websites. James Rosewell heads Marketers for an Open Web. He told the Associated Press that even though the changes are aimed at improving user privacy, Google will still be able to track users of its own services. What they're not saying is that people are logged into our products all the time and therefore are giving permission to be tracked when they use search, Maps, Gmail, or YouTube, Rosewell said. What they're not saying is, we're going to stop all of that. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Imagine a time machine. You've just climbed into it for the purpose of visiting the United States in the 1950s. What would you expect to find? In the 1950s, America was a nation whose population was growing as never before. It was a nation where the popular culture of television was both reflecting and influencing its lifestyle. But it was also a nation that believed it was on the edge of nuclear war. Americans were happy to put World War II behind them. The war ended in 1945. People were hopeful. They thought the world would be peaceful for a while. By 1950, however, political tensions were high again. The United States and the Soviet Union were allies in World War II. But after the war, they became enemies in what came to be known as the Cold War. Communists took control of one Eastern European nation after another. The Soviet Union, led by Joseph Stalin, strengthened its armed forces. However, the United States thought America alone possessed the most powerful weapon of all, the atomic bomb. But in 1949, a United States Air Force plane discovered strange conditions in the atmosphere. What was causing them? The answer came quickly. The Soviet Union had tested its own atomic bomb. The nuclear race was on. The two nations competed to build weapons of mass destruction. A doomsday clock on the cover of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists warned of a growing danger of nuclear destruction. Members of that group were afraid of what science had produced, and even more afraid of what it could produce. By 1949, the time on the doomsday clock was 3 minutes to midnight. In 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea. The Korean War increased efforts in the United States to develop a weapon even more deadly than the atomic bomb. That weapon was the hydrogen bomb. The Soviets were also working to develop their own hydrogen bomb. Some Americans built bomb shelters in their backyards, hoping to have a safe place for their families in case of a nuclear attack. Other Americans, however, were tired of being afraid. After years of sacrifice, they wanted to enjoy the good life in a growing economy. 1952 was a presidential election year. Americans elected Dwight Eisenhower, a military hero of World War II. The years after the war produced the baby boom generation. In 1950, there were 24 million young children in America. By 1960, that number was 35 million. More families meant the need for more houses, and bigger families needed bigger houses. In 1950 alone, almost 1.5 million new homes were built in America. Most of these new houses were located in suburbs, the areas outside cities. People moved to the suburbs because they thought the schools there were better than city schools. They also liked having more space for their children to play in. More space meant children had room to lay out electric train sets. In a lot of American homes, playing with electric trains was an activity that brought the whole family together. Television ads for Lionel trains even featured baseball great Joe DiMaggio.
Lionel trains proudly present the Joe DiMaggio Show, starring the Yankee clipper Joe DiMaggio himself.
The late 1950s brought the Barbie doll and a big circular tube of colorful plastic called the hula hoop. People had to learn to move their hips in a circular motion, like a hula dancer in Hawaii, to spin it around their body. Hula hoops became hugely popular in America. Also popular was the poodle cut, not for dogs, but for women who wanted to look stylish. They fixed their hair into lots of small curls, like the hair on a poodle. Actress Mary Martin had made the poodle cut famous in the musical South Pacific. That play opened on Broadway in New York in 1949 and ran into the early 1950s.
A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend.
In Hollywood, one of the biggest movie stars of the 1950s was Marilyn Monroe. She starred in films like Gentlemen Prefer Blondes in 1953. Her platinum blonde hairstyle also became popular among American women.
I woke up this morning, you know, and the sun was shining, and it was nice, and all that type of stuff. My first thing, I saw you. And I said, no, boy, this is going to be one terrific day.
Another famous actor was James Dean, best known for the 1955 movie Rebel Without a Cause. That same year, he died in a car accident at the age of 24. In literature, there were writers and poets who came to be known as the Beat Generation. These included Jack Kerouac, Gregory Corso, and Allen Ginsberg. To them, much of life in 1950s America was empty and meaningless. The painter Jackson Pollock represented a spirit of rebellion in art. Pollock would drop paint onto a canvas. What did his works mean? People had to decide for themselves. In music, the rebel was Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
Baby, Elvis was a 21-year-old truck driver when he sang on television for the first time. Some parents and religious leaders thought he was a bad influence. They thought the way he moved his body to the music was too suggestive. But young people screamed for more. They listened to Elvis's music on records, on the radio, and on the television program American Bandstand. American Bandstand became the most popular dance party in America. Every week, young people danced to the latest songs in front of the TV cameras. But it wasn't all rock and roll.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. 'Tis twilight time.
Whether on bandstand-type television programs or at local record hops or at home, young Americans and their parents dance cheek-to-cheek to romantic ballads as well. Television in the 1950s included dramas acted live every week. And there were quiz shows and game shows and comedy programs. If Elvis was the king of rock and roll, Lucille Ball was the queen of comedy. During the 1950s, millions of Americans watched I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball starred with her husband, Desi Arnaz. They played Lucy and Ricky Ricardo. Ricky is a Cuban band leader in New York. Lucy is a housewife who wishes she could be famous like her husband.
What do I have to do?
You're going to get me back on the television show.
How?
I don't know how. But if you don't...
All right. I will, Ricky. I'll get you back on the show. Don't even think of what you'll do if I don't.
Lucille Ball and I Love Lucy were both big influences on generations of entertainers and TV comedy producers. Variety shows offered a mix of entertainment. Americans watched shows hosted by comics like Milton Berle, Jackie Gleason, and Sid Caesar. Ed Sullivan was not a comedian. But for years, his show brought new acts into American homes every Sunday night. Television shows were all in black and white. But one night in 1953, Americans got their own time machine glimpse into the future of TV. It happened with an announcement during Sid Caesar's Your Show of Shows.
This is Richard Harkness in Washington. This week will long be remembered in the annals of television. For on Thursday, December 17th, the Federal Communications Commission approved compatible color television.
That meant that owners of TV sets could still watch programs broadcast in color in black and white instead of having to buy a new set. Color TV's popularity grew quickly, and the prices of color TVs came down, meaning more color TVs in American homes and more programs produced in color.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
During the 1950s, most of the people who appeared on television were white. If black actors appeared, they were usually in jobs working for white people. But in real life, a civil rights movement was beginning to gather strength. Legal battles were fought to end racial separation, especially in public schools. In 1954, the United States Supreme Court made a historic ruling. The case was known as Brown versus Board of Education. The court ruled that the requirement in some states for racially separate schools was unconstitutional. The court rejected the idea that schools for black students could be separate but equal to those attended by white students. By the 1960s, the civil rights movement would shake American society. Dwight Eisenhower was president for most of the 1950s. He faced the problems of communism, nuclear threats, and racial tensions. Ike had a calm way of speaking to the public. Many Americans saw him as a fatherly president. They thought that even in a dark and dangerous world, everything would be all right. Were they correct? We'll try to answer that in future programs.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.